At VOA News, I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington. Multiple sources reported that North Korea has restored part of a missile launch site, began dismantling after pledging to do so at the Singapore summit with U.S. President Donald Trump last year. VOA's Steve Miller has more from Seoul.
The Center for Strategic and International Studies concluded North Korea is pursuing a rapid rebuilding at the Tongchang-ri launch site, also known as Sohae. The CSIS report said, quote, "Activity is evident at the vertical engine test stand and the launch pad's rail-mounted rocket transfer structure," end quote. The news comes days after a second summit on denuclearization between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un broke down over differences on how far North Korea was willing to limit its nuclear program and the degree of U.S. willingness to ease sanctions. There's been no reply from South Korean officials as President Moon Jae-in continues to work toward finding a way to resume denuclearization talks between Washington and Pyongyang. Steve Miller, VOA News, Seoul.
U.S. President Donald Trump lashing out at Democratic lawmakers on Tuesday, this after the House Democrats opened a wide-ranging investigation of him and his administration. The Associated Press correspondent Rita Foley reports.
President Trump tweets, "The Democrats have gone stone-cold crazy. Presidential harassment," he calls it, in all capital letters with an exclamation point. What brought on this reaction? The House Judiciary Committee's new investigation into what Chairman Jerry Nadler, a Democrat, calls possible obstruction of justice, corruption, and abuse of power. On Monday, the committee sent requests for documents to 81 people and organizations linked to President Trump and his associates. Rita Foley, Washington.
This is VOA News from here in Washington. London's counterterrorism police are investigating who mailed three small bombs to two airports and a major rail station on Tuesday. Fortunately, no one was injured by the devices, one of which caused a small fire in an office building at Heathrow Airport. Two other packages were discovered at one of London's busiest rail stations, Waterloo, and a third was found in an office at London City Airport. The flights were unaffected, though a light rail linking the London City with the central London area was temporarily suspended. Yemen and its Saudi and EAU allies accusing the Houthi rebels of breaking their agreement to withdraw from two ports. Ambassadors from the two countries sent a letter to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, asking him to demand the Houthis carry out their commitments. The three countries who have been trying to push the Iranian-backed Houthis out of Yemen accuse the rebels of digging in by building trenches and reinforcing their military positions. There has been no reply from the rebels so far, who have said it's the other side that's breaking the deal. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro says he would defeat a crazed minority determined to destabilize the country. It was his first remark since opposition leader Juan Guaido defied him by returning to Venezuela on Monday after seeking support from Latin American countries. Maduro spoke during a ceremony to commemorate the sixth anniversary of the death of his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, calling on supporters to attend an anti-imperialist demonstration on March 9th, coinciding with the opposition march announced by Guaido. Senegal President Macky Sall is officially beginning a second term in office after the Constitutional Court declared him the winner of last month's election. The court said Sall was re-elected by 58% of the vote. Sall's victory was not without some controversy. Some human rights groups criticized his government for convicting two powerful opposition members on alleged corruption charges to keep them from running. Sall's ambitious economic development plans has propelled Senegal's economy to one of the highest growth rates in Africa. South Sudan's president is calling on his people to refrain from revenge attacks as the country tries to move on from a brutal civil war. Speaking Tuesday, Salva Kiir said that with a peace deal in place, people must try to reconcile and peacefully coexist. Kiir also said that conflict was caused by rivalries in the ruling SPLM party, though he declined to take personal responsibility. Despite funding and other challenges, though, Kiir said the former warring parties will soon have a transitional government of unity. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 6th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. There have been more economic crimes indictments in Liberia.
Why we are doing this is because the government has received documentary and other physical evidence of criminality and also of criminal culpability.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. Streets in Sudan's capital and other parts of the country were deserted on Tuesday in response to a call for a one-day strike. South Sudan's president embarks on an apology tour. Dozens are injured during refugee protests in the Libyan detention center. And Burundi's government forces a UN human rights office to close.
It means that those who will be facing torture, human rights abuses, this will not be reported. The government will be, at the same time, the player and the referee.
A professor at the University of Burundi speaking on condition of anonymity. And a Nigerian-American designer finds fertile ground in Italy's abandoned towns. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Liberian government on Tuesday formally indicted five executives of the Central Bank of Liberia in connection with the allegedly missing 15 billion Liberian dollars. Those charged include former bank governor Milton Weeks and deputy director for Operation Charles Sirleaf, the son of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. All five are being held without bond at the Monrovia City Prison. They face numerous charges, including economic sabotage, misuse of public funds, and criminal facilitation. Liberia's Information Minister Eugene Nambuye says the government has also indicted the Crane Currency Company for printing excess Liberian money when there were no letters officially authorized in such printing.
The government of Liberia, through the Ministry of Justice, in addition to the charge of Mr. Sirleaf, Mr. Weeks, Mr. Walker, and the two others, have today served an indictment on the Crane Currency, Crane ABSE of Sweden, the company that printed the money for the government of Liberia. Why we are doing this is because the government has received documentary and other physical evidence of criminality and also of criminal culpability. And the matter is now before the courts.
So what sort of crimes did the Crane Printing Company, what sort of crimes do you think they committed?
Well, we have charged them with economic sabotage, criminal conspiracy, and criminal facilitation. Because, as you know, they fraudulently engaged in the printing of Liberian dollar banknotes. They did it without proper authorization. And they also printed far beyond what their initial contract had given them the authorization to do.
Mr. Minister, there are Liberians who are crying out that they thought that Mr. Samuel Toure should have also been indicted.
Why? Mr. Toure, as the Minister of Finance and head of the Technical Economic Management Team, passed a policy decision for there to be a mapping up exercise. The execution of that policy decision was carried out solely by the Central Bank of Liberia. The Central Bank has adduced to the government of Liberia all of the records. They have adduced it, and there has been no determination of criminality, nor has there been a determination of criminal culpability. If there was any malfeasance, Mr. Toure, who was just a policy person, cannot be held responsible for whatever malfeasance may have happened. So the political hue and cry against Mr. Toure is very unfounded.
Minister Nambwe, you were Minister of Information during the presidency of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and my understanding that some of the acts that are being investigated probably took place during the administration of President Sirleaf. Have you heard anything? Has the former president reacted?
No, I've not heard any reaction from the former president. This is a matter in the courts. This is why the government is ensuring that there be a free and fair trial for those who are accused in keeping with Liberian law. The former president has a spokesperson. She herself has spoken to you and to the BBC in the past, so I am not her spokesperson, and I have not heard her saying anything publicly or privately.
There is this rumors in Monrovia now about the health of Mr. Charles Sirleaf himself. Have you heard something about how he is doing in prison right now?
Well, I have not seen him since he was arrested, but today, quite interestingly, the head of the United Nations in Liberia and the head of ECOWAS and other members of the international community informed the government that they have received information that Mr. Salif had not been well treated in prison and that there was a possibility that he was dead, and therefore they wanted some clarification from the government. We allowed them to visit the prison. They sat with Mr. Salif for 7 minutes, I think about 30 minutes or thereabouts. They spoke to him in the presence of Ministry of Justice officials, and then after that they had a meeting with President Biya that was attended by the president and a few of us ministers, and we reiterated that our business as a government was to ensure the protection of every citizen, whether you are charged or not, under the principle of presumption of innocence until one is proven guilty. Mr. Salif, according to the head of the United Nations in Liberia, had requested that he wanted to see his personal doctor and not the doctor that is available from the government. We acquiesced to that request, and his private doctor will be visiting him very shortly. The ECOWAS and UN team also informed the president that they will pay a visit to the former president to assure her, because apparently she had also raised some concerns with him about the health of her son.
Minister Nambwit, thank you very much again. We are happy to always have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Eugene Nambwit is Liberia's Information Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Burundi has ordered the closure of the UN Human Rights Office in Burundi. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, said Tuesday that the Burundian government said it had made sufficient progress in human rights and therefore a UN Rights Office in Burundi was no longer justified. Moses Javier Rimana has the story from Bujumbura.
In a press release, the UN Rights Office in the country said that it had initiated discussions with the government of Burundi to reopen its doors with no success. Burundi Human Rights Minister Martin Nivyabandi said that the country is now able to monitor and protect human rights in the country.
On the side of Burundi, we are very committed as an institution to promoting different human rights in different ways. People must be more informed. They have to be informed that we will do our best to ensure that the human rights are respected and protected.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, after the closure of the office, said that it was with a deep regret that the office was closed in Burundi after 23 years of presence in the country. The closure comes after Burundi government in 2016 suspended all corporations with the Human Rights Office. After the report by the UN Independent Investigation on Burundi was released, which indicated widespread of systematic patterns of violations of human rights in the country, and that executions have been committed on a large scale by the security forces and the ruling party youth wing in Imbonerakure. Agathon Rwasa, a Burundian opposition leader, said that the impunity and human rights violations are still ongoing in the country.
After all, one can deny there is no impunity, but the facts are there, and they are a little bit arrogant to prove that impunity is there, because when people are prosecuted for the commission of different, who is responsible indeed? When we have justice, when we have police, when we have different institutions which are meant to implement the law.
The UN Human Rights Office in Burundi was set up in 1995 in the context of massive human rights violations perpetrated in the country following the assassination of President Melchior Ndadaye. A professor at a university in Burundi who preferred not to reveal his name said that the move will negatively impact Burundian citizens.
It means that those who will be facing torture, human rights abuses, this will not be reported. It will be the government reporting about the situation of human rights. The government will be at the same time the player and the referee.
According to the UN, the Rights Office helped to ensure the incorporation of a human rights dimension to the implementation of the Arusha Agreement. Burundi government believes the National Human Rights Commission now has the capacity to report and document human rights violations.
That was Moses Javier Rimana reporting from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. Today is Wednesday, March 6th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The Sudanese Trade Union Association and several opposition parties issued a call for a one-day general strike on Tuesday, excluding critical fields like pharmacies and hospitals. Witnesses report in the capital, Khartoum, and its sister city, Uduma, indicate the strike call was being observed by the overwhelming majority of the population. Edward Urania reports from Cairo.
Arab news channels broadcast amateur video of empty streets in Khartoum and neighboring Omdurman on Tuesday, indicating the large majority of people heeded the call for a one-day general strike by all but critical professions. The Sudanese Trade Union Association, which is behind the strike call, noted in a tweet that the strike is a step in the direction of an across-the-board civil disobedience campaign to paralyze the government. Sky News Arabia said on its website that activists report that streets in the capital Khartoum and Omdurman to the west are empty as thousands of citizens heed the strike call. Former Prime Minister Sadiq al-Mahdi, who was ousted by current President Omar al-Bashir in 1989, called on the embattled president to step down in a speech to supporters several days ago. He says that the Sudanese people would like to reach a historic stepping stone and that it be peaceful, putting an end to bloodshed and achieving the legitimate demands of the people. President Bashir, writing on his Facebook page Tuesday, insisted that peace remains the essential principle of the state, given the overriding belief that war is antithetical to development and stability. He also told supporters in a televised speech that the government must address the needs of young people. He says that we are doing our best to improve sports facilities for youth, renovating old facilities, and enlarging others in order to give them a place to channel their energies. Amid ongoing protests, some political leaders appear to be straddling the fence. Democratic Union Party head Ahmed Bilal Osman told supporters he opposes chaos. He says that he is against the leap into the unknown and anything that creates more tension and polarization. Rabia Abdel Atti, a spokesman for the ruling General Congress Party, told Al Hora TV that President Bashir has indicated that he will not run for re-election in 2020 and that efforts should be made to reach a political consensus. He says that a peaceful solution must eventually be found to the ongoing crisis and that many of the political parties and leaders that are calling for protests do not represent the Sudanese people and should not speak for them. Democracy activist Akram Mukhtar, however, says that President Bashir has a long history of not responding to the demands of the Sudanese people for liberty and democracy. He added that Bashir also promised a number of years ago not to run for re-election, and he still ran again. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir resumed his two-week tour of the Bahr-Ghazal region on Tuesday after interrupting it on Monday to receive the Eritrean and Ethiopian heads of state. The president apologized to the people of Wau State on behalf of the ruling SPLM party for the suffering they have endured during the conflict. Mr. Kiir called on the people to avoid revenge attacks on others who may have hurt them during the conflict. Michael Atit reports from Wau.
Addressing hundreds of Wau residents at Wau Stadium, Mr. Kiir admitted the ruling SPLM party is the blame for the continued power struggle in South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, President Kiir says it is the conflict among the power-hungry politicians that brought suffering for the entire nation.
What happened among the SPLM leaders is the main cause of your suffering, and it is the same SPLM which fought for so long to liberate this country. They fought among themselves as they struggled for power. As a leader, I accept that these things happened, even though I did not do anything wrong myself. I see that I am also on the wrong side, as my party is the main cause of the suffering of my own people.
Mr. Kiir says, with a peace deal in place, people should reconcile and peacefully coexist. He says he's aware that many families have lost loved ones over the long conflict, but he's asking South Sudanese to forgive one another and move forward as one nation.
I need you to forget about what happened in the past and hold your hands together. I need my people to live peacefully with one another. I'm aware that many of you have lost many of your relatives during the conflict. Please don't revenge. I don't want to hear anything of that kind.
Mr. Kir also appealed to the holdout rebel groups that did not sign last year's revitalized peace agreement to lay down their arms and join the peace process. He also called on the IDPs sheltering in the UN-run protection of civilian sites, churches and schools compounds to return home. The president admitted that the agreement is being implemented at a slow pace, which he says is largely due to the lack of funds. Despite that challenge, he says, the former warring parties will form a transitional government of national unity at the end of the pre-transitional period in May this year.
If everything goes well, we are going to form a government of national unity in May, which will include all the political parties. This government will last for 3 years and will be followed by a national election. So I call upon you to prepare yourselves for that election.
Kir is expected to visit the Gogrial state capital, Kwajok, as part of his regional tour. He will also visit Awil, capital of the former northern Baragazal state, as well as Raja, the Lol state capital. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The UN Refugee Agency says dozens of refugees were injured during a violent confrontation with guards at a detention center in the Libyan capital Tripoli last week. It says the refugees reportedly were trying to escape dire conditions of internment at the Sika detention center. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Thousands of refugees and migrants are being held in appalling, abusive conditions in Libyan detention centers. Last week, the frustration of living under such dire conditions with no end in sight boiled over. UN Refugee Agency spokeswoman Shabia Mantou says protests by asylum seekers anxious about their months of confinement turned violent when forceful measures were used against them. She says around 50 people were injured when the police moved in to end the protests. She says two badly injured people have been taken to hospital.
At the time of the riots, we estimate that around 400 asylum seekers were held in Sika Detention Centre, of whom all were registered with UNHCR, except for 20 individuals who had arrived, who had newly arrived to the centre. And the breakdown we have of those 400 asylum seekers, 200 were from Eritrea, 100 were from Somalia, 53 were from Ethiopia, and 20 from Sudan.
Mantou says the UNHCR has raised concerns with the authorities about these riots. She says the agency for a long time has been calling for an end to detention in Libya. She says refugees and asylum seekers should be allowed to stay in the communities while being screened for protection needs.
People in need of international protection shouldn't be detained. They should be protected, in fact. I mean, people who are seeking international protection to be held in those conditions, which are deplorable and horrific, they should be allowed to be, they should be screened for international protection needs and shouldn't be detained. They should be protected.
The UNHCR reports 5,700 refugees and migrants currently are in detention, of whom 4,100 are of concern to UNHCR and may have a legitimate case for international protection. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerian-American designer Wale Oyajide visited the southern Italian region of Calabria to photograph and film some of the migrants who have helped populate the deserted towns of this depressed area of Italy. Selected migrants were his models and wore his creations. The designer's aim was to draw attention to an integration that has proven to be successful both for migrants and Italians. Sabina Castelfranco reports.
Calabria is an Italian region that has largely been forgotten. It is not on the tourist track because it lacks the comforts and amenities desired by people on vacation. For years now, many young people have chosen to move away and go north in search of jobs, leaving its beautiful hilltop villages and towns abandoned. But in more recent times, the many migrants arriving on Italian shores have been responsible for breathing new life here. Favour Joseph is 24 years old, from Nigeria. She holds her young daughter Wealthy in her arms and talks of her harrowing journey and the suffering she endured while transiting through Libya. She said she had to leave her home because there was no future for her there. Now living in Calabria, she is happy.
I live a free life here, unlike in Libya. You are just like a prisoner in Libya. But here in Italy, you can go to anywhere you like, just move around. Life here in Italy is better than back home. It's better than in Africa, I believe so.
Favour has been in Italy for 2 years. She has been given one of the empty homes in the town of Stignano, where she says the locals welcomed her like a daughter. She managed to obtain her papers to stay, and her hope is to get a job so that she can properly take care of herself and her daughter. Favour and Wealthy were selected by Nigerian-American designer Wale Oyeyede to model his clothes. He came here because he realized how migrants like Favour had enlivened a declining community.
Every time we've gone out casting into a group of migrants, we've pulled out people who are not only physically gorgeous, but they have incredible stories and incredible depth and intelligence to them that generally has not been regarded by society.
The designer believes that even if you come from a marginalized society, there is no reason not to feel proud about who you are and where you come from. And seeing yourself in promising, bold, and regal images can help you and the society that surrounds you respect you.
For me, it's kind of almost a social experiment on the idea of the biases we hold against people and how we treat each other differently based on the way that our exterior appearances are. And so when I put these migrants who are just regular people in clothing that's striking, all of a sudden we stop and we look and we see them as human beings.
18-year-old Aliou Kebe from Gambia was thrilled to be the only male model chosen at the Calabrian center where he is living.
Yeah, I feel great. The first day I wear the clothes, I look at myself, I say, wow, this is very cool.
Aliou arrived in Italy as a teenager and is grateful to be alive. He remembers how tough crossing the Sahara was and will never forget his journey across the Mediterranean on a rubber boat with 155 others before they were all rescued. No one died, fortunately, he said. Even though he has no papers to stay, he is happy to be in Italy, which he says is a peaceful country, and he dreams of becoming a footballer. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Stignano, Italy.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. The Liberian government Tuesday formally indicted 5 executives of the Central Bank of Liberia in connection with the allegedly missing $15 billion. Those charged include former bank governor Milton Weeks and deputy director for Operation Charles Sirleaf, the son of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. All 5 are being held without bond at the Monrovia Central Prison. Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says the government has also indicted the Crane Currency Company for printing excess Liberian money when there were no letters of officially authorizing such printing. That's it for this Wednesday, March 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we are celebrating the accomplishments of women on the continent. This year's United Nations theme is Think Equal, Build Smart, Innovate for Change. an in-depth discussion on the path to gender equality on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.